Today, the rates are beginning to bite. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Steve from Canstar. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Martin.
Great to have you back on again. Thanks for spending a bit of time with us. And we're talking
a couple
of days after the RBA decision, 25 basis points. But I'm concerned now about the cumulative impact of all these rate rises over the last seven hikes. It's beginning to bite, isn't it?
It sure is. If you have a $500,000 loan, now a lot of people do these days, and at the average interest rate, your interest rate has gone up with every RBA increase, and your repayment now is around $800 more than it was prior to the Reserve Bank starting to move. Now, that's a massive increase to the family budget, and people have got to find that money from somewhere. And they haven't even been hit with the bill for all of those increases yet. So there's more to come, I'm sorry. And the Reserve Bank statement says there's more yet to come. So add all of that $800 plus whatever is ahead of us still, plus higher fuel costs, higher electricity bills, higher grocery bills, higher insurances. And, you know, the family budget's getting under a lot of pressure for most people.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important observation, Steve, because it's not just the mortgage, it's all the other outgoings which are going through the roof. You know, the latest CPI said the non-discretionary inflation was at 8.4% on the official figures. Probably some people think it's even higher than that. So that's a big number. And one of the things I have in my models is looking at discretionary spending. How much money have they got, you know, after tax and everything else, available? And now some people are actually in the 35 to 45% of their disposable income going just to pay the mortgage. I mean, this is a huge, huge impost on where it was just a few months ago.
Yeah, look, it is. And 30% is seen to be mortgage stress territory. So if you're at 35 or 40%, well, you're well and truly in that territory. Now, I just want to be clear about that measure, though, because it's an averaging kind of measure. Now, let's say you're on an income of an average income, $90,000. If you're spending 30% of that income, and that's pre-tax, if you're spending 30% of that income, just repaying your loan, then you are really in very deep water. You know, you've really got to pay your bills. However, if you've got a $300,000 income, you can afford well more than that, because this is the whole difference between discretionary and non-discretionary spending. So, you know, you can cut back. This was the argument during the Royal Commission about where you and Shiraz. You can cut back if you're on that bigger income and still afford more than the 30%. But if you're on an average income, 30% is stress territory, and a lot of people are moving into that state.
Yeah, and I don't actually use the 30% rule myself on the principle that it's often gross rather than net income. And I try to look at the total flow of cash in and out. And my argument is, if people are basically spending more on all the things they have to spend on, versus what's coming in, eventually they're going to run out of runway, right? So I define them as stressed in that situation. And therefore, this cash flow idea is actually pretty important, because that's the real life that people actually are now dealing with, where they're trying to balance all sorts of commitments and trying to work out, you know, what to pay and who to pay and what not to pay. Of course, the mortgage or the rent tends to be near the top of the list quite often, but the issue is then, well, what else do they give up to be able to actually make sure that they can go on paying the mortgage or the rent?
Yeah, look, when you do a loan application, or when you go into a calculator like the one on our site, you actually go through that process of saying, look, how much am I spending? And there are estimates as well that help guide you, because it's some difficult question for a lot of people to ask. But you with the help of these estimates, you can say, look, all right, this much it goes that for a family of two kids, this much goes on food typically, and then you add in things like your petrol costs, transport costs, all of those other non-discretionary things, your insurances, any other loan repayments you've got. So you add all of those in and you get an answer that says, look, you can afford this much of a loan currently, and currently includes the 3% APRA buffer. So that's the better way to look at it, because you get some perverse outcomes otherwise. You get an outcome that says, look, the bank's likely to approve this much loan, and you look at the repayments and say, yeah, but that's in the mortgage stress territory because it's over 30%, which can happen. So you've really got to, as a lender, you've got to go through that process of understanding the situation of the person and what they can actually repay. As a borrower today, you have to do exactly the same thing. So do it now before you start feeling you're in deep water, and say, look, here's what I can afford, because I've gone through all of this spending that I must do to live, and I've got this repayment today, and bump that up for the next maybe 1% of increase. Can I afford that repayment? And if not, what's got to give? Because something's got to give.
Yeah, and unfortunately, sometimes I find in my surveys that people don't actually start addressing this until suddenly it really has bitten them. Right. And it seems to me that the really critical thing is to think ahead, because we know that those interest rates are going to continue to rise. So Phil Lowe said there are going to be more rate rises, maybe 25 basis points a throw, but, you know, rates are going to go higher. And by the way, the Federal Reserve did another 75 overnight, which indicates that internationally rates are going higher. So I think we've got to assume it's going to follow to some extent down here in Australia. So it really is important to plan ahead, rather than just wait for the traffic accident to happen. Unfortunately, though, in my surveys, about half of households, even those with some financial pressures, actually don't know where they are. That's a big deal, because if you don't know where you are, anyway is good or bad. So, you know, work on it now. And even if you don't feel the pressure now, think about how these things might shape out.
Yeah, that's right. And go in, don't wait for the bank to tell you how much. Go into the calculator on the CanStar side and play around with it by bumping up the interest rate by another 2.25, another 0.25, another 0.25, another 0.25, and end up with what your final repayment is likely to be. And that's where you start. You say, that's the repayment I've got to be able to afford, and it could be worse, but at least, you know, add 1% to what we've got today. And so work out your repayment and start planning for it right away, because it will come, and you want to be at least in a position to answer some of those questions when it does come. The bank will write to you and say, sooner or later, you owe us this much per month, and that's $1,000 more than you were paying in April. So don't wait for that to start planning for it.
And, of course, those with a fixed rate that is keeping them protected for a certain period of time, at some point in the next few months, that fixed rate will end. And that means we're going to have a massive step up for quite a few households.
Martin, 2 years ago, and it was, I looked this up just the other day, you know, October last year, 2 years ago, the two-year fixed rate loan averaged about 2.5%. And the 3 year was about 2.5% also, and in both cases the lowest rates were around 2%. And what's more, some of those lowest prices were from some of the big banks. So a lot of people were fixing, and something like 40, 45, 50% in some banks were actually fixing the interest rate. Now that means that to date they've been absolutely immune to what the Reserve Bank has done. But that was 2 years ago. Now, if you fixed for 2 years, 2 years ago, well, guess what? The bank's already written to you and said, you are now transferring to a variable rate loan. Now, if you, say, took a loan at the average, say 2.5%, 2 years ago, and you've been paying at 2.5% all the way through, rates have gone up by over that. So you're more than doubling your interest rate, and that's in one big hit. So you're actually going to be up for, you know, another $800, $900 on a $500,000 loan in one hit. So you haven't even had time to adjust gradually. You're just going to be asked for it straight away. So that's People are talking about a cliff, and it's a cliff, all right. There are a lot of people going to fall over that cliff between now and, the next 12, 18 months. If you're in that situation, I hope you're thinking about it while you've got a little bit longer to run on your fixed rate. Enjoy it while you can, but don't enjoy it. Put it aside so that when you are asked for that bigger repayment, you've built up the buffer already. So if you're going to be asked for another $1,000, well, maybe start paying the best part of that right now, but pay it into your offset account or get ahead on the loan.
Yes, and the statistics from the RBA is saying about a quarter of all loans are fixed and are likely to come up for renewal and review in the next little while. You know, that's a large proportion of those mortgages. And unfortunately, a lot of people are still saying, well, I'm not feeling it. You know, I'm just going to carry on spending regardless, right? Unfortunately, the higher rate will come knocking. And again, so prepare is, I think, the critical message here.
Yeah, it is. I think you've actually got to trick yourself. If you're in that situation, say you've got a year to run on your fixed rate, and there are plenty of people who are in that situation because 3 years is the favoured term. So plenty of people have another year to run and some a year and a half. Now, if you're in that situation, trick yourself into saying, look, I'm actually paying this as if the bank insists that I pay that extra $1,000. And I'm going to find a way to do it now, and I'm going to put it away so that I'm ready when the time comes. And if it gets too tough, I can at least put some of that extra towards the current repayments I'm being asked for.
Yes. Unfortunately, I have to say that some Australians don't actually think ahead very far, right? They tend to take it, month in, month out. And look, some people have no spare cash at all and therefore have no ability to do that. But if you do, it's really important to start laying those foundations now, I think. The thing I'm worried about, Steve, is I've had a number of people over the last few weeks say to me, the banks are starting to talk to me about 40-year loans, extend the term of the loan dramatically. And I actually independently validated that a couple of the big banks are now experimenting with thoughts around 40-year loans, maybe in the first third of next year, which I'm a bit concerned about because it just pushes everything out. The other thing that I'm getting from mortgage brokers is the idea that, what we'll do is we'll extend the rate of the loan, but then you'll be able to pay off the capital from your superannuation fund because by then you'll be able to tack on it. And I'm thinking, well, hang on a moment, that is the last thing, the last strategy that should be offered to people to solve their mortgage problem, well, solve the bank's mortgage problem. But unfortunately, it seems to be out there.
Look, for the bank to be offering a 40-year loan says that they're terrified about what's in front of them because it's not just their customers that are going to be in trouble with this, it's the bank as well. Now, I kind of accept that sometimes you've got to make a short-term decision, which isn't in your long-term financial, well, it probably is, but if you left it for the long term, it would be a horrendous decision to make. Now, there are a couple of those decisions. One is you go interest only, but a lot of banks aren't going to let you go interest only anyway, and you'll pay a higher interest rate. And in 5 years' time, you'll owe the bank just as much, and you'll be a long way further behind. You'll pay a lot of extra interest. So that's one that's possible, but not that ideal. The other one is that you do refinance and refinance into a 30-year loan again, even if you've already gone 10 years. So effectively you're saying it now is a 40-year loan in aggregate. There's a big but, though. Don't do that and leave it. If you must do something as a last resort like that to get your repayment down, well, okay, survive the short term to get to the long term. But in 3 or 4 years' time, when you're back on your feet, look at it and say, now I've got to bump up my loan repayment to knock it off well before I retire so that I can get serious about building for a healthy retirement. Don't retire with a loan and wipe out your super.
No, unfortunately, that superannuation is there for another purpose, which is to provide you an income into old age. And, the alternative is if you actually grab your super to pay off your mortgage, you end up then potentially slipping onto the government pension, which is pretty low. But it also begs a question about, you know, the overall state of your finances later. So the problem I have is that, again, Steve, people think about the now rather than also think about the later. And, you know, for some people who are younger, you know, the pension age and everything else seems ages. But actually, you and I know it comes knocking and quite quick.
Oh, come on, Martin. But, yeah, it does. And the context of that is that, let's say you're 30 when you borrow for a home and you take out a 30-year loan. Well, 30 and 30 is 60. It's not a tricky concept, and I think people will get that. So they're not far away from retiring age when they hit 60. If you push the loan term out through either of these techniques, then you're still paying off the residual of the loan, albeit that hopefully it's a lot smaller, the day you retire. So it does come around fast, because the context is that the loan repayment also, the loan is stretched over it's a work lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you end up paying in aggregate a lot more interest back to the bank, which means the banks are quite happy because they just make more money off you. Mm. But it isn't necessarily always the most sensible thing. And, you know, sometimes I say to people, look, you know, just make sure you know what you're getting into. If this is the only route to go down, there are really some significant consequences, and unfortunately sometimes those consequences are not spelled out by those who are very keen to sell you another loan.
Yeah, look, that's right, and you've got to really be aware of them yourself, and you've got to be prepared to track it for yourself, because let's say you did take one of these solutions, you know, either refinance and sort of roll the term at 30 years or take out a 40-year loan, the bank isn't going to come to you and say, oh, you know, you're 10 years in, now it's the time to pay us more. Because they're very happy to let it roll. You're making your repayments every month. You build up equity in the property. They're happy to let it roll at that stage. You have to actually be someone who sits down and reviews it and says, look, I'm motoring to be 72 when I finally clear this loan. That doesn't sound a great situation to be in. And so you've got to take responsibility. You've got to play around with calculators, repayment calculators. And it's just a case of you open the thing up, put your loan amount in, start playing with it, and work out what you're tracking to. You can sort of reverse engineer it through trial and error. And what am I tracking to, and when am I going to get this thing repaid? And if that doesn't sound a sensible solution, then play some more and work out a higher repayment and actually do it, even though the bank's not asking for it.
That's right. The loan ultimately has to be repaid. Unfortunately, that is just part of the deal, isn't it? Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Now, let's just talk briefly. The 25 basis point, well, NAB was the first to announce that it was passed on to loan holders. CBA's come out, and so I assume that everybody else will do the same. They're being a bit slow on the old deposit side, though, aren't they?
Oh, Martin, here we go again, I guess, because, yes, they have been. They'll come out with an announcement and say, at this stage, we're not changing any of our deposit rates, or they'll come out and they'll change one of the deposit rates but not the other one, or they'll come out and change the bonus rate and not the base rate that existing customers get. So, yeah, it's still lagging a long way behind the interest rate increases that they passed on to borrowers. And you know, by a good sort of 1.5% behind in a lot of cases. Now, there are some banks and some Australian deposit-taking institutions that are guaranteed up to $250,000 by the government who are actually passing on reasonable increases. And you've got to hunt them out, because it's easy to hunt them out. Just look at a website like ours that lists all of these savings accounts, and you'll see them there. And there are 4% plus rates. There's a 4.7% rate available on term deposits out to 4 years. So you know, there are reasonable rates out there. And you know, why settle for 2% when you can get 4%? Well, you shouldn't. So take it into your own hands and make sure you get the repayment. Yeah, you get the reasonable return on your hard-earned savings.
Absolutely. Well, it can make the difference in cash flow terms if you get a little bit more in terms of interest. So that's really very important. As you say, the calculators there and the portals there list the top ones, and the difference between those and some of the other players are, well, quite remarkable, I have to say.
Nice.
Now, let's just briefly talk about borrowing power, because, of course, the other issue. We've still got the 3% buffer from APRA, which basically means that when you actually go for a loan application, it's not the current mortgage rate they use, it's 3% above the current mortgage rate. Mortgage rates have gone up. That means that the buffer is 3% over the mortgage rate, which means that your ability to borrow for the given income and expenditure profile is now being throttled, and throttled quite significantly.
Yeah, look, I'm glad you asked, because I did some analysis on this the other day, and I've just dug in and found where it is. What we did is that we looked at the median house prices back in October 2021 and then again in April 2022. And we said, all right, now how much has the median house price changed? And the median house price has fallen in most cities in Australia. So you would think, well, that's easier to buy. I don't need as much deposit. I'll be fine. This is a buying opportunity. Well, you know, it's not, because at the same time, repayments have gone up. So when you put it all in the melting pot and say, all right, home prices have fallen by in Sydney of 100,000, roughly 100,000 since April 22. And expected to fall further. So you put that in the melting pot, and that's the positive, more affordable. But then you look at the interest rate increases we're having, and your income will have to have gone up by a quarter to buy the median house, a quarter, if interest rates end up where they are, about 1% more than today in March 2023. Now, that's a heck of a lot more. Now, some people might be getting a quarter pay increase, but, gee, not everyone, and not many, I'd say. So that's kind of the way we've looked at it simply. Your income will have to have gone up that much just to buy the median house. That's the same quality house in the same sort of suburb. So, yes, interest rates absolutely do knock around the affordability. It's easier to get the deposit, but it's a lot harder to repay the loan. And it's a problem we haven't seen for a few years now, but suddenly we're seeing it. And it's going to be a heck of an awakening for people to say, you know, I thought this was going to be good for me, but gee. And first-time home buyers in particular, I feel sorry for them. You know, they've spent years now worrying about how they're going to put a deposit together. Finally, a bit of the pressure on that has come off, but the repayments are so high that they can actually not really afford the house that they could have afforded before. Affordability, interest rates are meant to affect affordability. They're meant to slow you up on buying houses and everything else. The impact is huge.
It's on my calculations. The borrowing power is somewhere between 20% and 30% down from where it was. So you just can't get the low. Now, if you are somebody who's not in the market but trying to get into the market, a first-time buyer, then you've got a big problem, right? Because you've got to, as you say, increase your income dramatically to get in. But the other issue is that if you are actually somebody who's already got a mortgage and a property, and you got it a year or so ago when rates were ultra low, when your borrowing power was a lot bigger, now when you go to refinance that loan or try and get a better rate, you suddenly discover that you are no longer within the standard lending parameters, which means essentially you are, well, what they call a mortgage prisoner.
Yeah, you are. Exactly. I mean, I've looked at the plight of the first home buyer who hasn't jumped into the market. The plight of the first home buyer who bought in 6 to 12 months ago is far worse again, because not only have they taken out the bigger loan than someone buying today, so it's a bigger loan, with higher repayments, but they've also paid a higher price and the price has fallen. Now, those price falls are unfortunately taking people uncomfortably close to zero. The projection that I used for this was one that one of the big banks came out with, and it's not quite taking anyone to zero in any of the capitals, but that's on average.
The equity in the property.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes. Yeah. Oh, sorry, zero equity, yeah. So you've bought at the top of the market, effectively. You've taken out a big loan with the biggest repayments. The property price falls and your equity is being dwindled away because the loan's not falling, but the property price is falling. And the equity you have, the deposit that you put in, has been whittled away gradually, uncomfortably close, very close to zero in a couple of the big capital cities. And it's uncomfortable everywhere, frankly, because people are losing money that they put into the loan. So it's a pretty uncomfortable position, very uncomfortable position to be in, especially when you took out a big loan and the interest rates have gone up big time and your repayments have gone up big time. You better be able to afford the repayments, because the bank's not going to feel very comfortable about giving you a lot of time to get on top of this, because they're facing losses just as you are.
Yes, it's becoming structural, isn't it, unfortunately? In fact, we saw it in the latest ABS statistics that came out yesterday, which showed the growth in new lending had reversed, both for owner-occupying and for investment lending. The refinancing had come off a little. The average loan size was also a little lower than previously. In fact, in New South Wales, it was quite considerably down. So the whole lending landscape has completely changed from just 6 months ago. And it's interesting, Steve, because many people have never seen this environment that we're now in. We've only ever known, rates come down, lending power increase, banks being more willing to lend. This is a whole new environment, and bearing in mind what Phil Lowe has said about rates are going to have to go higher and stay higher probably into 2024, this is a completely different environment from a financial perspective and from a property purchasing perspective.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Not only have we got a generation of borrowers who have never seen it before, I think in some cases we have bankers who've never seen it before. Now, that's pretty terrifying. Yeah. Now, fortunately, there are older bankers too, but there are bankers who've never seen it before. There are borrowers who've never seen it before, and they're not ready for it. They didn't expect to find themselves ever in a situation like this, because it has been for the last, as long as I can remember now, one-way traffic. You've got to go, when did we last have property prices falling? It was 20 years ago. It was a long time ago. So it is unknown territory, and I'm not sure how people could have planned for it, because they just wouldn't have known. You know, if you talked about this 2 years ago, people would have said, oh, "Come on, no, really?"
I was talking about it for the last 8 or 9 years, because I'm old enough to remember it, right? People said, "No, the government will save us. The RBA will save us. The RBA said rates will be ultra low until 2024. I've got plenty of time, plenty of wriggle room, right? Yeah. Unfortunately, chickens are coming home to roost now.
Yeah, and I guess the RBA sort of probably learned something out of this too. For a long time there, where rates weren't moving, the RBA governor kept saying, look, we're holding rates down. We think we'll be holding them down until we can get inflation back into the target range of 2 to 3%. Then he started putting timeframes into it. And unfortunately, that has put a lot of people into this awful situation where they've kind of accepted that timeframe. And even as he was saying it, a lot of us were saying, well, no, we don't think so. We think it's coming a lot sooner than that. And sure enough, it did. So I think even the RBA has probably learned, well, let's not put timeframes on this. Let's put the target on this as we start it.
Indeed. Well, wise after the event is perhaps the easy position to be. But we are in, a situation where people need to be very careful. And so that's why the advice you gave earlier on about understanding what your cash flows are, planning ahead, all of those things are really, really important. It's also worth underscoring, I think, that those people who are in with a mortgage with financial difficulty, the banks are obliged to at least try and help it if they can, right, under the hardship scheme. But there are some limits, aren't there, to how much they actually can do?
There are. First up, banks don't forgive debt. That's a very, very extreme solution and a real thin end of the wedge when banks start doing that. So don't expect that will be the outcome. Banks don't want to sell people up. It's a bad look. It doesn't help them, and it doesn't help the person. So they don't want to do it. So they will try to find us. They're obliged to try to find a solution, and they will try to find a solution. But if you go to the bank and say, look, I can't afford my repayments at all, or I can only afford to make half of my repayments, the bank is likely to say to you, well, look, we can tolerate that for a number of months, but you actually have to find a solution to this because we can't tolerate it forever, because you'll just end up owing us so much and any equity you've got will have long disappeared and we'll lose money. You've lost your money. No one's better off. So the bank will say, look, we'll help you for a while. We'll allow you to have a holiday from your repayments or have a take a reduced repayment for this period of time. But you've got to have a solution that says, look, after that, I can actually repay my loan. And it might mean for the short term a second job. It might mean a lot tougher budgeting. It might mean the sale of other assets. It might, at the end of the day, mean you've got to sell the house. But try not to. Try to hold onto the house at all costs. Because it's hard to then get back in after that. But don't expect that the bank will put it on the never-never, because that's not the case.
Yeah, and I think it's also important, Steve, to highlight that if you start Googling, you know, debt help and those sorts of things, you need to be very, very, very careful, because there are firms out there who will start charging you an arm and a leg, promising that they'll be able to negotiate on your behalf. They need to be, you know, handled very cautiously. There is, of course, the National Debt Helpline on 1-800-007-007. That's a free service from the government. So if people are in difficulty and don't know where to turn, that's a really good place to turn to, because they will give you objective, independent advice. Not necessarily what you want to hear, but it actually will help. But be very careful, because there are so many other sites out there in Google land. If you don't know what you're looking for, you can end up actually being led up the garden path.
Yeah. Look, if you're having trouble with your repayments and the first thing they do is say, now pay me $2,000 and I'll sort this out for you, well, now you're $2,000 further down the line. So you're absolutely right. The government agency, the National Help National Debt Helpline, is the way to go. And you and I, Martin, talk about, look, do your household budget, work out your repayments. Well, you know, people can't always do that. They need help with that, because they're not professionals at this and they haven't worked on it from the other side of the desk like you and I have. So if you can't figure out how to do that, get onto them then. Get their help with it. Get their suggestions about, you know, having sat down with them and done that budget, get their suggestions about how you should be preparing for this, what measures, what steps you should be taking. Because if you get onto them soon enough, even, you know, before you even want them to intermediate with the bank or anything, get on them soon enough and you might actually be able to avoid the worst depths of this problem. But they're the place to go. Do not go to Acme, we'll save your house, we'll work out your finances. Because that's going to cost you money.
Absolutely. And I also would say that don't just talk to a mortgage broker and say, what should I do? Because they will only give you a very myopic view. They won't give you a holistic view of you know, what the financial situation is. Sometimes refinancing is not a good move. Sometimes extending the loan life is not a good move. So it's important to get the right advice from the right people. So the National Debt Helpline is really, really a good way to go. I think the other point I just want to highlight is there might be a temptation to reach for an extra credit card or even a payday loan, or maybe even use buy now, pay later. Those sorts of solutions are not really solutions, are they, for this sort of situation?
You kick the can down the road if you take out extra high cost debt and end up with not only a home loan you can't afford, but also a payday loan you can't afford, or a credit card you can't afford. You've just aggravated the problem, and you won't be able to sort of refinance the whole thing into your home loan to get rid of those other debts at any point, because no one will take on further debt. So don't do that. Talk to the bank first before you consider any move like that. And having spoken to the bank, talk to the hotline first, really, and then talk to the bank and with a proposal, because you leave it until you've tried the self-medication, and you'll probably end up overdosing.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, you know, it is harder to fix the problem the more in debt you are, the more different debts that you've got, the more juggling that you've got to try and do to cover all of those various things. So the sooner you begin to sort of grasp the nettle, the better. Also, it's worth just highlighting that, you know, even the electricity companies, the gas companies, the phone companies, they do also have some facility to try and help. But you've got to actually reach for them, and you've got to have some information to be able to actually have a conversation with them. So just picking up the phone and saying, I've got a problem, isn't necessarily going to be helpful unless you've actually done a bit of thinking first.
Yeah, look, I always say to people, you must go to them with a solution, you know, because you can't expect them to sort out every nuance of your finances. They can help with short-term measures that give you a little bit of relief, but that's from their end. They're not going to sort out all of your finances. And that's why, you know, the helpline is such a good idea, because they do go that extra step and look at your own personal situation and say, here's where you can make savings. And if you're serious about this, make savings. But if you go to a bank and you have you know, three credit cards all bubbling away healthily in massive debt and a payday loan, well, they're going to say, look, you're a hopeless case, and we'll do what we're obliged to do, but we can't see any hope that we'll get you out of trouble here. So, you know, don't self-medicate. You know, it really is the wrong approach. You know, get help professionally and talk to the bank early. Don't stick your head in the sand either, and don't sort of leave it to the – don't ignore the bank's calls and letters and stuff. The bank respects people who go to them and say, I have this problem. I've had some help here. Here's my budget. Here's how much I can afford for now. I've got to get another job. When I get that, I'll be back on my feet, and yada, yada, yada. So it's understand your situation, get help, and plan a solution so that you can communicate all that to the bank when you go and see them.
Yeah, and just the last philosophical point I think it's worth exploring slightly is this. We've been used over the last 20 years or so to just getting more and more debt because rates came down, and so we had a very much a debt-based economy. Household finances were debt-driven. I think there's a question mark now about how sensible that is, particularly in the current environment, and that's going to be a significant change of trajectory for many households. The other point is that actually levels of financial education in Australia is really quite low. So in my experience, a lot of people really don't understand compounding effects of debt, for example, what those APRs actually mean. So there is a broader question about how we learn what we need to learn about finance, I think.
Look, I agree. I think you're raising a couple of really points there, very interesting points there. One is the education thing. And yes, I absolutely agree with you. There is no question that people just don't understand enough. And one of the concepts that people really do need to get their head around is compounding. Because compounding, it sounds weird, and you think, well, you know, how could that work? I borrowed $500,000 from a bank, and you know, I don't get this compounding thing. Well, stop making repayments for a year and just add interest on, and you're adding interest on top of interest on top of interest, as well as the principal, as well as the amount you borrowed, and you'll see what compounding is, because it won't take you long, you know, a couple of years on, and you'll owe the bank $600,000, not $500,000. So that's what compounding is. That's one of the must-understand things. But there's a lot more to it than that, and you're absolutely right. Financial literacy is a real problem in the country.
Yeah, and it's not really covered in schools, in my view, adequately, and it's not really something that people realise that they need until it's almost too late. So there's a really important role, what you do and what I do, is to try and raise the level of awareness and education and try and help people along this journey. But, you know, there's a lot more to do, unfortunately, because a lot of people are really struggling with even the basic concepts, and then, you know, they get these instant apps over the top and instant loans and instant gratification, all the digitalization. You know, it's made everything so simple at one level, But unfortunately, if you don't understand the real basics that we've been touching on in the last little while, you can actually end up in a very difficult situation financially. And so it really is important to learn the lessons and, you know, do the work, isn't it?
Look, it is. And the other point that I was going to make is that it's partly the education, but the other issue is that low interest rate periods where rates go super, super low encourage behaviours that are high, high risk. And that's what we've seen here. We've seen rates at 2%, sub 2% for home loans. And so many people qualify for a home loan comfortably, can make the repayments comfortably, but they take decisions that are just so high risk. And the same thing goes for businesses. So you go through a very low interest rate, a very low inflation period, and you find that people just make some really dumb decisions. And without understanding that rates will go up again, they get themselves in, they dig a hole for themselves before any of this even starts. So, you know, I think there'll be wiser people for a while after this, and it will sort out for most people long term, but some people are going to have a lot of pain on the way through. But it will pass and we'll get back to a more normal situation. But I hope people remember the lessons from the period and say, look, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've been through a couple of cycles in the past and I've seen, you know, the ups and the downs, the good and the bad. I've seen property prices go very high because of availability of credit. I've seen the reverse as well, and I've seen businesses effectively fall over at the point when they just can't afford to make the repayments. So there are so many important lessons here, and you know, let's hope that people learn them on the way through, but also make some good decisions early to avoid the worst possible outcomes.
Yeah, look, let's all concentrate now on getting through the short term, because look, the reality is that two-thirds of borrowers won't have a problem with this. They'll survive it. They'll have to tighten the belt a bit, but they'll survive it. But there's a third of borrowers that will struggle big time with the scenario ahead. So put your energies into surviving the next 4 or 5 years financially and holding onto your house, and then eventually property prices will go back up again. Wages will have gone up. You'll be starting to find the home loan more affordable and you'll get through it. But it's important that you make sure you're one of the ones that's a survivor, even if you've got to make some tough decisions about lifestyle in between times.
Absolutely. And just putting your head in the sand and saying she'll be right, unfortunately, won't cut it, will it?
No. She won't be right if that's your attitude.
Steve, I really appreciate your time today and some very, very important messages. Thanks, as always. We'll put some links and things below. The Canstar site's great in terms of getting some of the comparative data there. And I'm sure we'll be chatting again as the rate path continues to evolve.
I think there'll be plenty of opportunity, Martin.
I think you're right. Thanks, Steve. See you later.
Thanks, Martin. Cheers.